It's a victory edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you again. And Phil, I'm a firm believer if you want to rip on people when they do poorly, you must praise them when they do well. And that is mostly what we're going to do in today's show. Saturday's win by your Marquette Golden Eagles, certainly one of the best performances of the season.
Absolutely, and I mean, we should consider buying plane tickets to Houston for the April timeframe.
Slow down, but we'll get to the road ahead a little bit later in the show. But we definitely want to break down this Butler game, which was really, I don't know if I want to say a breakthrough performance, but it was certainly a very encouraging effort from a Marquette team that people were really down on, especially coming off the rough week the week before, and even in uninspiring win over Stetson.
Yeah, well, you know, the team, it was kind of one of those moments where the team put it all together, and we'll talk about both the extraordinary part of the game, you know, in terms of things we maybe won't see again or likely aren't seen again, and what the team did very solidly that they can build on going forward. But it was the first time this season, I think. You know, in Arizona State, LSU are far in the rearview mirror at this point, and maybe even Wisconsin. But this was the first time the team really felt like it kind of had it figured out. They had maybe a minute or two in the first half where you kind of went, oh boy, this I've seen this story, and it ends poorly for us, where they kind of just started to fall apart a little bit. And then whatever it was that Wojo said, you know, in the under four media timeout, they kind of snap, or actually the under eight media timeout in the first half, they snapped back together and really put together a top to bottom performance, I thought, against a good Butler team.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, you know, we'll definitely touch on some of the obvious things here. Certainly the one of two things that really stood out from the game was, we'll start with Henry Ellenson's performance. Probably his best performance, I would say, on both ends of the floor as a Marquette Golden Eagle. I thought he was really active defensively. And, of course, the point total just jumps out at you, 32 points. He still got 10 boards and got to the free throw line a lot, which was a big difference in the game.
Yeah, I thought, when we talked off pod, I think the free throw things was a great indicator of maybe Henry maturing a little bit in terms of recognizing, especially against Butler. Let's be honest, Butler's a little undersized compared to Marquette. But Henry realizing that he could take advantage of his size, be a little more aggressive, be a little bit more physical to work inside and get some buckets, and in this case, get fouled. I mean, those 16 free throw trips, I think, are representative of him, you know, being more aggressive physically and trying to draw contact. And it paid off in a big way. He also hit the two threes he took in the flow of the offense. So he cut the number of threes he typically takes in half, and he made both of them. So it's hard to argue with those kind of results.
Yeah, and active defensively, he had 6 blocks, and then just the numbers that really just don't show up in the stat sheet. I don't think he really got bullied around as he has been a lot this year, especially in Big East play, and maybe, as you mentioned, that's partly because Butler's not that big to begin with, but I think Henry really held his own on the defensive end of the floor. And, of course, you know, like I said, the point total was a huge difference maker. He looked just really confident out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if we see that more and more as we go through these last 10 games here, I think, who knows, maybe might be a little more interesting than we thought if we see that this version of Ellenson going forward.
Yeah, if this is recreatable, again, making up a word, then this is...
I like
is,
that word. Though.
Yeah, if he can recreate this performance semi-continuously for the rest of the season, I think the team can really leverage off of it, because it forces the opponents to adjust to Henry, and that should, we have plenty of other weapons that should be able to take some of that pressure off, that you know, if they look too much at Henry, they should have big games. And you know, it was just I think you were right, his defense was probably the most improved, not only his man-on-man defense, but also his help defense. I think that was one of the things that was really good against Butler, was Marquette was able to help off, and they kind of choked the lane a little bit on some of some of Butler's drives. And Wojo even mentioned it in the post-game press conference. Some of the defensive efforts by others, like especially Hanif Cheatham, really had an impact on Butler down the stretch. Roosevelt Jones was playing the point forward position, and he was getting bugged by Tracy Carter and Dwayne Wilson, and Hanif Cheatham was on Dunham, and I think they really did a great job of kind of tiring out players, so folks like Henry could take advantage.
And it was as focused a 40 minutes, I think, as we've seen maybe since the Providence game, where, they were, you said maybe, yeah, there was maybe a bit of a lull in the first half, but never a point where I felt the game was getting away from them. Teams are going to make runs in basketball. That's just, I mean, that happens in just about any game. But I just thought, the running theme through a lot of the frustrating losses has been, and even some of the uninspiring wins, like the Stetson game or St. John's, just not being able to put together 40 good minutes when they go into 6 or 7 minute stretches where they don't do anything right, especially, they don't score any buckets. That's when people kind of get frustrated and wonder where the team was going. And we didn't see anything like that on Saturday against Butler. I thought they were very organized and very determined offensively. Mainly that was Ellinson getting the buckets he got, but just very focused effort. And I was glad they were able to regroup and bounce back. Even after the win, after the Stetson game, that some of the players talked about, like, we should feel good, but we really don't right now. But I'm glad they were able to shake that off on Thursday and Friday, and they were really up for it on Saturday.
Yeah, and to be fair, I mean, we got some just amazing performances that we may not see again in the future, especially in the 3-point shooting department. So you got to play in the right moments and get a little lucky, I suppose, or have all the skill kind of come together at the right time. And they were able to capitalize on that. And like you said, they were focused. And even a couple of times where maybe Butler went up 4 or 5 points, especially in the first half, where you might have, in previous games or like the Stetson game when they got within 9 and you're like, oh my God, what is going on here? You might have gotten worried, but they refocused and they made the stops on the defensive end when they needed to, and they were able to bring together a solid performance that landed them a really important win to build on for the next, they got 9 more games in conference, and this is a critical win.
Yeah, and you mentioned the 3-point shooting, something we may not see again. That leads me to the other obvious nugget from the win over Butler that I wanted to at least touch on, and that's, of course, Tracy Carter and his shooting. 5 of 7 from 3, 15 points for him. Great performance. It reminded me of that game Dwight Bikes had a while back when he just out of nowhere just couldn't miss against Notre Dame and was just hitting everything. And so you wonder, like, Dwight really never had a game like that again. I mean, he had some good games, but nothing ever like that. And so you wonder, as you alluded to there, Phil, will we see something like that again, or was that just a total aberration and we'll take it and take the win, but we can't count on that happening again?
Yeah, and that's kind of it'll be interesting to see how Tracy reacts, right? Does Tracy take that and continue to play within himself and have solid performance, maybe not where he's making 5 of 7, but where he's contributing? Or do we see that as he takes that as a green light to just go ballistic regardless of the results? That'll be, he's a freshman. I'm not, putting that on Tracy as he's a bad player, but he's a freshman. It's easy. He, more than anyone on the team, I think, has a tendency to get overamped,
Right,
or
but yeah.
overrevved, if you will, to borrow, to play off his the engine nickname.
Yeah, but you don't want him going out there thinking he's Steph Curry, is basically what you're saying.
Right, exactly. Playing within himself, playing within the scheme, I think he can, and he did that, and we saw the result. It was just kind of funny being at the Bradley Center. I think the last made three he took, with a couple of minutes left, he took it pretty quick in the shot clock. It was an open shot, and literally as he was shooting it, I was yelling no. It went in, and the people in front of me turned around and said, "Yeah, we didn't want him to shoot it either, but we'll take it." So, so it was just that was just kind of one of those games where you didn't expect it, but you got it, and it was a huge contribution. And even more important than I think the threes, they certainly were extremely helpful. But Tracy's defense was, in his minutes, I think he played 22, 21 minutes, something like that. I think his defense was very important on Roosevelt Jones to really get him tired out. And he was held scoreless in the second half, which I think was one of the critical aspects to Marquette getting the win.
Yeah, Jones hit that 70-footer, which is the first three-pointer of his career at the end of the half. You're like, oh, man, we played a
great
half.
He can make things from 10 feet in and from 75 feet out.
Yeah, and pretty much nowhere in between.
Don't ask him to do anything else.
But, yeah, like after Jones hit that shot, like, man, Marquette played a great half of basketball, and they're tied after that prayer. But they really didn't let that faze them, and they came out really strong in the second half. But I agree with you that, you know, Carter really gave Marquette, obviously, some great minutes beyond just the points that you see in the box score. That was interesting. You know, when they started the game with Fisher, Ellenson, Cheatham, Johnson, and Wilson, you know, I made a note of it, saying I think those are actually Marquette's five best players. The problem, of course, is there's really not a true point guard out there, but it's important that you're able to have Carter coming off the bench when, you know, you get to a point like, all right, we're just turning the ball over too much, or you know, we need something else in this offense. Is, you know, there's not enough passing, and we're not getting the ball to the guys who need to get the ball, so I maybe Carter coming off the bench will be a nice weapon for Marquette as they try to get as many wins as they can here in the next nine games.
Yeah, I think it's probably smart. And I do like the idea of, I think you're correct. It's the starting five right now are Marquette's five best players, at least from a performance standpoint. So I think that's critical to get the team going right away. And then you can mix in players as either foul trouble occurs or as, you know, as they get tired. And, you know, we're seeing an interesting thing. Yes, in the Butler game, we saw Matt Helt come in, you know, in the first two or three minutes of the game, give Luke Fisher a quick rest, you know, put in a couple of minutes, and then Luke Fisher was pretty good to go the rest of the game. And he and Henry were not in foul trouble, which probably has a bigger correlation to the win than just about anything else we saw, was having our two big men on the court, especially against a team of Butler's stature.
Yeah, we've said that several times here on the show, actually, is if Marquette's going to win the tough games, they're going to need 30-plus minutes from Fisher and Ellenson, and then that's exactly what they got on Saturday. By the way, if you had told me before the game that Luke Fisher would score 0 points, I would assume that Marquette got blown out.
But what's funny is Wojo said almost exactly the same thing in the post game interview with Homer on 540 ESPN. He said, if you had told me that Fisher would have 0 points, I would have had a really hard time thinking we were going to win.
Yeah, and I obviously, because I'm, you know, obviously Ellenson is the big name, but I think Fisher more or less has kind of been the MVP, because when he's going well, Marquette usually is too. But yeah, for him to have 0 points, but he still had a presence out there. It's not like he was worthless out there. He took three shots and none of them went in. But you didn't really need that many points from Fisher, because Ellenson and Carter had such huge games. Now, I would not advise that we have many more games where Fisher has 0 points.
Right.
I would hope he is scoring plenty over these next nine games. But just as the game unfolded, you really just didn't need that much offense from Fisher, because you got it from other places. And he still had an impact in there, because obviously he takes up space, he draws their biggest defender, he had six boards, he had five blocks, so it's not like he did nothing out there, he just didn't have any points.
Well, and I really wonder, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much they, if de-emphasize is the right word, I don't know if the game plan was to use Luke less or what have you. I mean, they had him out on the perimeter a lot, actually, you know, relieving the ball handler and passing it off and setting ball screens. So there was a definitive difference in kind of the game plan as to previous games. But I do wonder if he wasn't focusing a lot more on the rebounding and the blocks and the defense. Because what doesn't show up on the stats sheets is there was a couple of the plays he made either by boxing out one or two guys that enabled somebody else to get the rebound, or forced Butler on offense to you know, change what they were doing because he was such a presence inside. You know, so I think it was the little things that Luke Fisher was able to contribute that made that a successful game.
Yeah, Travis for Butler only 2 of 12 from the floor. I mean, he's essentially their big guy. So obviously Marquette did a great job on basically using their size, which is kind of what we said on the show last week. If they're going to beat Butler, they have a size advantage, and they took advantage of it. And I overall, great effort, solid win. So basically, Marquette has hit the first of their 8-team parlay. If they want to, if they want to build any kind of a resume, but it was a very nice win. So I have to say, you know, for the grumpy Gusses who say, well, the fans never show up, seemed like it was a really good atmosphere there too.
Yeah, and I was actually just going to bring that up because, like you said earlier, with the you've got to, you know, if you're gonna criticize them when they don't do well, and you got to praise them when they do. That crowd was one probably the best crowd I've seen at the BC all season. Just from an intensity and being into the game and excited, it was an outstanding crowd. I mean, it was maybe 75% of where they can really be when it's a really big game or the team's, you know, doing really well in the season. But they, you know, they certainly seem to impact Butler a little bit with the noise and the engagement. And again, Wojo called that out, and so did some of the players post game about, you know, what energy they got from the crowd. So good job, especially the students showing up and really, really being intense and into the game.
I think it's important that when you get a crowd like that, you deliver a performance like that to get them to come back, right? It's not like they stunk up the place and people left the place unhappy. They gave them a great performance, and then hopefully that will get people to come back again and bring their friends.
Yeah, luckily there was only like 6 people in the house for the Stetson game, so no one was dissuaded from coming to the Butler game on Saturday.
And by the way, speaking of, I guess when you're looking at attendance, though, wasn't that, if you look at the entire season, the first game in quite a while where you would expect a great crowd? Because, you know, you had Belmont as the opener, and then, you know, Iowa, that was a Thursday night, so that was a good game, or, you know, attractive game, you look at that one. But really, then you had all the bye games, and then you had Xavier, which was when the students were still on break, and then DePaul was a Wednesday night. So there really haven't been that many home games to really get excited about, to be perfectly honest with you.
Yeah,
so this was the first one in a while where you would expect the fans to really show up, and they did.
Yeah, no, I think that's actually a very good point to make, is that, you know, we've been bagging on the crowd a little bit, but this is, you know, a Saturday game against a quality opponent with the students in town, you know, so it's the perfect storm. So hopefully we can see a follow-up against Creighton on Saturday the 13th. You know, nobody's going out and celebrating Valentine's Day too early or anything.
Yeah, that's the bummer, is that there's not another home game next week to just kind of build off the momentum as we kind of transition into what lies ahead now for Marquette. Two road games this week, and honestly, it's two pretty tough ones. When you're looking at Seton Hall, which has continued to play better for the most part, I mean, they're 34 in KenPom. Obviously, we know what happened last time they played. I mean, they really just pulled away from Marquette in the second half. And then you got Xavier coming up after that on Saturday the 6th, which is, I mean, that's in Cincinnati, by the way, so that's going to be a really tough. So two really tough road games coming up for Marquette this week, Phil. But on the plus side, I guess we're all now very anxious to see if a switch has been flipped, or if, you know, this past Saturday against Butler was just the perfect storm where Marquette got a great win, and if we're going to see, you know, the team regress a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, with the performance against Seton Hall, you know, yes, that was at home, but Marquette was in it for, I mean, the score is probably not reflective of how well Marquette did in the first half, certainly. So there's some room for positive hope, especially after that Butler performance, that they can build on that and be successful against Seton Hall. And, you know, if you can pull off the upset against Seton Hall on the road, which I think they're talented enough, if they can carry forward the positivity from the Butler game, you're now looking at Marquette having a 4-game winning streak. That says a lot going into that Xavier game. I don't think they beat Xavier, but I mean, there's stranger things have happened when you start to get on a roll. You get a young team that doesn't know they shouldn't be playing this well. You know, maybe psychologically they get right and they can pull off some upsets.
Yeah, well, you know, like I mentioned a minute ago, this it's like a between an 8 and 10 game parlay that Marquette really has to put together if you want to get really optimistic and talk about tournament stuff. But I think what's really more important to look at is with the win over Butler, Marquette has put itself at least in a position to get, you know, 4 more wins maybe and get to maybe, you know, 7 or 8 wins in conference play. Then if you have that, then I think you have a comfortable NIT resume, which I think is important because I really don't think anybody wants to sit through another offseason where Marquette has absolutely no postseason play. So as much as we all want to make the big dance, I think making the NIT would be a nice step forward for this young group. And by beating Butler, a game that they weren't favored to win, you know, it's more realistic that they could get to, you know, at least 7 wins. And, you know, 8 is still going to be a challenge, but at least you see it is at least a realistic possibility that maybe they could get that many wins in the conference.
Yeah, well, and you and I and some other folks are engaged in some discussion on Twitter around, you know, what is it, you know, NIT, is that really what we should be playing for? Because, you know, could you go and win the NIT tournament with this and really, you know, get between the extra practices and the, you know, and the pressure games you're playing in, is that help build a team for next year? You know, I think the tournament is still unrealistic. I'd love to be wrong. I'd love to, you know, just be totally embarrassed that I didn't believe in this team, you know, at this time of year, when we do our podcast for us on the way to the national championship or something. but I think if they can string together some good games, I think more important even than, hey, let's win 10 games and get into the tournament, I think is the next 3 or 4 games playing at a consistent level. Because that's been Wojo's biggest issue and my biggest issue with the team. Clearly, Wojo's opinion matters a little bit more than mine.
Just a little.
Is just the consistency of the team. If they can find their consistency, even if they lose in some of those games, that's building for the games down the road. And who knows? I mean, the Big East tournament, that's an opportunity, right? I mean, you win 4 games in 4 days, you're dancing no matter what. So,
and if you could sneak into 6th place, you only got to win 3.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, you can do some damage here yet. Not all hope is lost for the tournament, but it's a matter of finding that consistency through these games as we go forward.
I did point this out on Twitter on Saturday, which was, of course, January 30th, that on January 30th, 2010, Marquette was in a similar situation, very desperate, 3-5 in conference, beat UConn, got a much-needed quality win, then won 7 out of their next 9 games, plus 2 more in the Big East tournament, and then, of course, they made the field. Just saying, it's happened before.
So lightning does strike twice occasionally?
Well, we're gonna see. But again, more realistically speaking, Phil, per that, you know, that conversation we were having on Twitter with Paint Touches and Anonymous Eagle, you know, it was pointed out that it was maybe one way to look at it is if Marquette were to get, say, 3 or 4, 5 more wins, that all they're really doing would be hurting teams like Butler and Georgetown and Creighton of possibly getting in the tournament. And my response to that is, sorry, it's. It's every man for himself until March, until we get to the Selection Sunday. When we get to Selection Sunday and we see how many Big East teams are in, I will cheer for all those teams to go as far as they possibly can because it makes the conference look good. But until we get to then, it is every man for himself. We'll see how many wins Marquette can get. If it means Marquette, you know, gets to 7 wins in the conference and they screw over Seton Hall and Butler on the way, sorry, guys. Yeah. We're trying to get to
Come
the NIT.
Come at me, bro.
We're trying to build our own team, and we're trying to get as many wins as possible and help these young kids win as many games. We're not going to tank because this isn't the NBA. There is no benefit to tanking.
Right. We don't get an automatic Henry Ellenson has to stay for a second year.
We don't get a free All-American if we finish last in the conference. If that was the case, DePaul would be amazing.
or St. John's. Let's be fair. DePaul may have been replaced by St. John's right now.
For now, but I will say St. John's is in on some big name recruits. We'll see if they're able to actually land any of them. But I'm still realistically just hoping Marquette can find a way to say get 3 more wins would be great. 4, maybe I'm getting greedy. But you look at maybe if you can get a split with Creighton, of course you got to go and beat freaking DePaul. You got to do that. And so if you can get a split with Creighton, beat DePaul, then you got to find one or two more wins somewhere else. Maybe you can get Georgetown at home. Maybe you can steal one against Seton Hall this week. If you can, yeah, like I said, if you can get 3, 4, 5 wins, then I think Marquette is probably solidly in the NIT, and then we'll just kind of see, you know, how high our stack of chips is when we actually get to Selection Sunday and see if it matters.
Well, not to re-legislate the past, but out of curiosity, Joe, if let's pretend our nightmare didn't happen and Marquette somehow managed to pull off a win against DePaul. They're 16 and 6 and right. 5-4 in conference at this point in time. Do you feel differently? Do you feel like...
I would feel a little differently, yeah, just because, you know, that turd of a game against DePaul, I would be looking past it, right? And they right. would have no bad losses, too.
Right. And they would, thing. At that point, they would have four wins in a row. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but that's just crazy to me that flipping that DePaul loss to a win, somehow all of a sudden we're talking about the big dance instead of just NIT. I don't think it has that kind of significance, but I mean, it was a pretty bad loss, I think.
Oh yeah, I mean, it just looks bad when you have a freaking loss to DePaul on your resume at home, and so that's why they have to win so many games to make up for it, which I don't think is realistic. But that's why I am just kind of clinging to the NIT. By the way, one thing I want to bring up, it's getting a little off topic here. You know, they said, Henry Ellenson's 32 points were the most by a Marquette freshman since Dwayne Wade in 2002. We've seen this before because we saw that last year that they mentioned Wade as a freshman when in fact he was a sophomore in 2002, 2001, 2002. I have a sneaking suspicion that I wonder if Marquette has rewritten the record books just so they can name drop Wade as much as possible.
Ooh, conspiracy theory. I wish you had told me to bring my tinfoil hat to this discussion.
But I just wonder why, like I said, we were there. And if you look at any NBA draft board from 2003, it says Miami Heat, Dwayne Wade, Jr., Marquette. He was a junior when he was in the NBA draft. There is no doubt about it, and there's no doubt in my mind he was a sophomore the year before when they went to the tournament.
He was ineligible his freshman year.
That's right, and so I just wonder why they just keep throwing out that the freshman record is held by Dwayne Wade when it wasn't. He didn't play as a freshman.
Well,
if you want to say it's a record for a first-year player, okay.
Well, and that's why they got to split hairs, theoretically, because George Thompson was ineligible to play his freshman year.
Yeah, because no freshmen were eligible.
No freshman could play. And so if we're going by first year, George should have some stuff in there that even over Wade. So that is interesting. And it goes back to there's always been the alumni debate, right? Is Dwayne Wade an alumnus? He's never graduated, and I guess –
oh, yeah. We claim as an alum. I mean, Missouri claims Brad Pitt. He was there a semester.
Well, I mean, have you seen his cheekbones?
Well, yes. He's a very handsome man.
Oh, okay. Wait, that's a different podcast. I'm sorry.
But, no, I think, yeah, any guy who plays, you claim him as a quote-unquote alum. You use that term loosely. But my thing, I just when I see record for Marquette freshman and Dwayne Wade in the same sentence, I'm like, I love name-dropping Dwayne Wade, of course, and I think that's why they do it. But he was not a freshman.
Well, now here's the next debate, right? I agree with that, and that's the conspiracy. And I'd be curious to get Marquette on record for that, you know, even Twitter, like, what's going on here? We know, because he was ineligible with it was like Prop 20 or something like that.
Prop 48, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, Prop 48, it doesn't even exist anymore. The NCAA took it away.
Right. The rule was if you were a partial qualifier, you could enroll at the school, be on scholarship. If you made the grades, then you could play your sophomore year. And theoretically, you know, not, you know, in Wade's case, obviously this wasn't really a scenario, but for any kid, if you stay 4 years, if you get to your senior year and you have met the academic requirements, then you would get that first year back and you could stay a fifth year and, then play a fourth year. So, but obviously that wasn't a case for Wade. He was going pro, so it never really came into play for him. But yeah, that was the scenario. So he came in, partial qualifier, had to sit out as a freshman, had to, meet the standards academically, which he did, so he could play as a sophomore, and then history happened in 2003. So yeah, that's kind of what happened. I just wanted to point that. I just wanted to bring that up in the podcast because we talk Marquette stuff here, and that's a Marquette thing for me. I don't know why they keep saying freshman records in Dwayne Wade because Dwayne Wade did not play as a freshman.
Well, speaking of not playing freshman year at Marquette and name dropping, who's the bigger name drop for Marquette right now? Jimmy Buckets or Dwayne Wade?
Oh man, don't make me compare those guys. I have to say, as far as name dropping, it's still Wade because he's a Hall of Famer. Like, I would say pretty confidently that Dwayne Wade will be in the Hall of Fame.
I would agree with
that. Yeah, but you know, Butler, is he on his way? Yes, but it is still so early in his career to call him a Hall of Famer. Now, if you're asking me who is the best player right now, then I think you could get into a debate because obviously Jimmy is just entering his prime, whereas Wade is still great. But I think it's fair to say at age 33, 32, 33, he's past his prime, with all respect, Mr. Wade.
Yeah.
Still a great player.
We'd still appreciate a phone call, but...
with all respect, you know, he's not 25 anymore.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And Father Time is undefeated. If you're saying who's the bigger name drop, obviously it's Wade. He's got 3 rings. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame. Jimmy is obviously the hot name right now. One of the hottest selling jerseys in the NBA right now, by the way. I think he's in the top 10.
Yeah, he is. I thought I saw he was number 7.
Woo.
And starting two guard for your East Conference All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that ain't bad.
He's doing just fine. He was selected to the All-Star. He's not going to start unless somebody pulled out with an injury. He was selected as a reserve.
Oh, was he a reserve? I thought I saw him as a starter.
Butler? Yeah, Butler's a reserve. Butler's a reserve.
Okay, all right.
But he could still start. But yeah, nice little off-topic discussion on NBA alumni.
we didn't even get into Predator.
we got Wade, and we still got Wesley Matthews here in Dallas. And by the way, speaking of alumni, we're getting way off topic with stuff, but still relative to Marquette. I didn't realize Lazar Hayward was still playing.
He is?
Yeah, he was traded to the L.A. Defenders, who have Vander Blue. So Lazar and... Vander Blue are now on the same team in the D-League.
Hey, what do you know? They're nearly the same height.
Yeah, good for Lazar.
Yeah, good. Hey, and listen, he's making NBA money, even in the D-League, that is way more than we're making.
He is getting paid to play basketball.
Right.
So
I'm more than a little
Lazar
jealous.
Lazar was always one of the fan favorites. You know, regardless.
Absolutely.
Obviously, his pro career really never materialized that much, and he really didn't play that much as an NBA player. But Lazar is a fan favorite. I mean, if he were to walk around the Marquette campus, everybody would love him. You know, everybody loves Lazar at Marquette.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we got really off topic there talking NBA stuff. But,
we need a map to find our way back.
I know. But so obviously Marquette's got 9 games left, and we'll see how many games they're going to be able to win. I think these two games are critical, are really tough. I should say I would say critical to win because obviously they're going to be really tough to win. But I will throw this out there. I'm pretty sure that depending on what the polls look like tomorrow, but I'm assuming Xavier will still be in the top 10. But if Marquette were to somehow beat Xavier, would they be the only team in the country that could claim 2 top 10 road wins?
Oof. I think so.
I think they would be. Because, I know obviously there have been a ton of top 5 upsets, like, you know, whether it's Carolina or Duke or Kansas or Oklahoma or Kentucky or Maryland or whoever's been in the top 5, they all keep losing. But it seems like they're all on the road, right?
Yeah.
Like, all these top 10 teams, they're not losing at home. But, you know, obviously Marquette beat Providence when it was a top 10 team. And if somehow Marquette's able to beat Xavier, granted, the rest of their resume would still be kind of meh, but that would be a heck of a feather in your cap if you could say, we're the only team in the country to have 2 top 10 road wins.
Huh. Yeah, that would be, it seems like a relatively obscure stat, if you will, but yes.
Yeah, it would be.
It would be. I mean, an argument could be made that's relevant come tournament time. It certainly wouldn't hurt.
It certainly wouldn't hurt because you put that on the first line of the resume. Just by the way, we're the only team to do this, and now you can, you know, look at all of our, you know, bye games. But look at these two top. But anyway, by the way, how unlikely would that be? Marquette 8% chance of winning per KenPom on Saturday against Xavier.
Well, that's
16-point dog.
Yeah, that's 7% more or 7% more than I would have given them prior to the Butler victory.
I actually agree with that. So we'll see what happens against Seton Hall and Xavier, and basically, like we've said, Phil, we'll see how much of an aberration Saturday was. And the thing is, you don't need that exact same performance again, necessarily. You know, you don't need Tracy Carter to suddenly be Steph Curry, and you don't necessarily need 32 from Ellington, although that would be nice. But, you know, somebody else steps up. You know, maybe you get something fluky in another way. Maybe Luke Fisher has 30 points, or maybe Sandy Cohen is red hot from downtown. So we'll see if they can get it from somewhere. It's obviously Marquette shooting, you know, 60% from the floor, or 60% from three in a game is pretty rare. So we'll see. We'll see what happens this week. I think if you come away with this week with one win, I think I'd be pretty happy with it. I think anything beyond that, we're probably getting greedy.
Yeah, I think we got to go for the split this week for sure. I mean, got to beat Seton Hall. I mean, Seton Hall's still a top 50 KenPom team, so it's not anything to shake a stick at to beat Seton Hall on the road. So if you can get a split there, you know, and sitting at 5-6. With Providence and Creighton coming up, those are those two home games. If you can win both of those, maybe you've got something together. I don't want to completely flip from my pessimism of last week, but you know, it's unlikely, but there is a road of possibility potential.
That's all we want is hope.
Yeah,
and we'll see how far we are next week, and see if Marquette is able to again maybe hit a few more on this 8-9-game parlay that they need to make happen for something big to happen. But again, as always, we thank you for listening here on Scrambled Eggs. Quickly, for the social media stuff on Twitter, I'm Joe McCann3. Phil is MOOF23. Team page is Crack Sidewalks. Go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. You can leave your comments there. We always love hearing what you think about the pod, any suggestions on how we can make it better. And of course, we can go on Facebook. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We post the podcast there. We're also on iTunes. Phil, let's hope for a split this week and maybe some corrections on what the freshman record really is.
Yeah, that's all we can hope for.
Keep an eye on the LA Defenders. Right.
Keep an eye on what?
The L.A. Defenders.
Yes, they're making moves.
Lazar and Vander, they're making moves. Have a great week, everyone. Hopefully we get a couple of wins. We'll see what happens. Until next week, seashells and balloons.